Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT, presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76-yard touchdown play to Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogilvie. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And we welcome you to another week of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, but this isn't just your regular week. It's the start of the Notre Dame football season week. Welcome to game week. We've got a football game to talk about on Saturday at Notre Dame Stadium as the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame open up their 2017 campaign against the Temple Owls. I'm Darren Pritchett. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. We are back live at Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, home of the South Bend Cubs, who take on the Lake County Captains tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Tickets are available if you'd like to come by the ballpark. Otherwise, the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show starts our coverage tonight at 6:50. It's a game week, so what do we have in store for you today? Well, our opening segment will focus on the Irish running game led by Josh Adams. You'll hear from Josh coming up in just a little bit. In our next segment, right around 5:30, the focus shifts to the defensive side of the football and Notre Dame senior rover slash safety, Drew Tranquil. You'll hear from Drew, and we'll evaluate the safety position going into game number one against Temple. My five question of the day at 5:50, the top five storylines that are unanswered going into Brian Kelly's weekly press conference tomorrow, which, by the way, you can hear live on 96.1 FM WSBT at noon. Then coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, more Notre Dame football conversation. Sean and I will talk about realistic expectations of this Fighting Irish football team. We'll have rapid fire, a look back at Mishawaka's loss to Valparaiso Friday night, and a quick preview of the South Bend Cubs, all coming up on Sports Beat, which is brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Legacy Heating and Air. I just have one question for you in the opening segment. Well, actually, I have a bunch.
Okay.
But to start the opening segment, are you ready for football now? Are you ready for that first game? Are we done talking about fall camp and all the other things leading up to a season? Are you ready to go officially?
Yeah, I am. I am. I just wish the NCAA would have a ruling on Alohi Gilman, but we haven't heard anything yet.
Well, it's one of the more ridiculous storylines in some time. There have been kids across the country, Eric, that have gotten their decisions made by the NCAA, some of them in early August, and I understand this is a new case, but from what we know, there's really no reason why this decision has not been made yet.
Correct. And there are a few other kids that are on hold, including Tristan Hodge, who transferred from Notre Dame to BYU, so just seems a little ridiculous, but the NCAA must have other things that they've got to be working on, I guess. I don't know.
I'd like to see the list of things.
I think when you talk about trying to put kids first, you know, you would think that that would be a decision that you would like to make in a timely fashion.
You're too smart to work for them.
Thank you.
Let's talk about this Fighting Irish football team from a running game perspective. Chip Long is the new offensive coordinator. He will call the plays. He comes from Memphis, where they had a pretty outstanding offense last year, his first year calling the plays for that Tiger program. What has he talked about a lot? Running the football, play action game. Run the football first. We want to be physical this year with our running game. Well, this running game features a veteran offensive line and three what are perceived to be high-end running backs with Josh Adams, Dexter Williams, and Tony Jones Jr. Adams is a junior running back. Last year, 12 games, 9 starts, 955 yards, 5.9 yards per carry, 5 touchdowns, also caught 21 passes for the Irish. Hamstring injury early in August 2016. It affected him starting off the regular season. Probably we saw the old Josh Adams in November, maybe toward the end of October. But he started to look like his old self again once we got deep into the season. So first off, let's talk about this. There's been a lot of focus by Brian Kelly in redeveloping what this program is in terms of work ethic and discipline. Long list of things, changing everything about the strength and conditioning program. Josh Adams was named a captain recently. That's a pretty good sign when one of your best football players gets named captain, because not every great football player automatically is a great leader. There aren't enough of those, to be quite frank. But Adams was named a captain. Significant, big deal.
I like it. I think that he was deserving of it. You know, when I had a chance to talk to him and also watch his YouTube video from last spring, he projected as a team leader, and you don't always need to have a captain's C on your chest to be a leader, but it just seemed like it was kind of screaming out for that. So I think he was well deserving of it. I know that Brian Kelly wants to have this team really take ownership of it, and having all the different captains I think helps, and having another one on offense I also think kind of helps balance things a little bit more, because you had most of them on defense.
Right. Recently, Josh Adams met the media. One of the first questions he was asked was about being named a captain. This is a media roundtable where media members are asking questions. You'll hear Tyler James during this particular segment. But here's some of the commentary of running back Josh Adams.
You know, I explained to him how, you know, I just had to thank God for the opportunity to explain to everybody that this wasn't just about me, it was about all of us, because of all the work that we put in, you know, during the offseason. And with the SWAT teams, it was a difficult transition for everybody. And just had to thank the guys for, you know, helping me grow and helping me through it. And explain to them that, you know, from here on out, you know, we're in charge of our destiny and our future. So, you know, this just means that we're going to move forward and continue to grow as a team. So,
how'd you find out? Like, take me through that aspect of it.
Well, he just told me today. So,
like this morning, or
yeah, right before we walked over, he explained to me, you know, the process. He explained to me the reasoning for putting me in that position earlier on in the year, just to watch me grow as a leader, and you know, and all the captains have something different to bring to the table. So, you know, understanding my role and what I have to contribute to this team was important, and he explained that to me. So, yeah, he just told me right before we walked over.
And then when did you address the team? Is that today after? Or was
Yeah, right after he told me, right before our mental edge, you know, he announced it, and I kind of addressed the team, just telling them how I felt from the heart, and explained that, you know, it's about all of us now, not just one singular person. So.
Did this cross your mind at any point in your career here that this would be something that you'd like to be appointed as?
No, I mean, it's definitely an honor and a blessing. You know, I had to, you know, just thank God for the opportunity. But, you know, I was more focused on, you know, becoming the best player I can, coming here, trying to get better, trying to win a national championship. Of course, you know, that's something that if it was, you know, given to anybody, it would be amazing. And it is an amazing feeling. But, you know, I was just focused on leading by example and just leading how I knew how to, and just trying to progress and get better every day. So obviously, yes, it's an amazing opportunity.
How have you evolved as a leader? How did you find your voice? What were the keys for you in terms of leadership?
Trying to, you know, step out and try to lead more vocally, you know, trying to, you know, really express through words, you know, how I felt and what kind of standard I set for myself and for other guys, you know, continue to lead by example and continue to bring other guys along with that, you know, not only holding myself to a high standard, but holding others to a, you know, a high standard as well, and making sure that everybody is accountable, and the rest of the captains have helped me amazingly, you know, with that transition and doing an amazing job of, you know, leading vocally and speaking up more. You know, even I'm not a guy that, you know, speaks out a lot, but, you know, when it's necessary, it is needed. So the rest of the captains did a great job with helping me with that.
That is Josh Adams, Notre Dame running back, talking about being named a captain for this football team. What type of season are you expecting him to have in a brand new offense that should have a lot of tempo, that's going to emphasize the running game, but with two other capable running backs in the equation?
I think Josh Adams will be one of the most productive running backs in the country. He comes in technically the guy with the highest career average of active players of yards per carry, and I think that's significant, and I would expect that to hold up over this season. Now, Notre Dame plays some really good run defenses this season, but I think between Notre Dame's ability to balance its offense, I think having three really good running backs keeps him from getting worn down too much. And I think the improvement of the offensive line, I'm pushing my chips closer to the middle of the table on that. I still want to see more, but certainly Brian Kelly and Chip Long are. I mean, the way that they're calling plays, the way that they're changing some formations, especially in goal line and short yard situations, they're going all in on this offensive line. And if it's as good as advertised, then it's going to mean a lot of good things for not just Josh Adams, but the whole running back crew.
Now, when you hear a coaching staff say we're going to be a run-first football team, we want to be physical, that doesn't mean that's going to be the game plan every week. You're not going to run the ball 50 times against the number one Rush defense and just do it just to say you did it. This is a football team that's going to be able to push the ball down the field. We believe with the passing game very effectively with Brandon Wimbush, elite player in Equanimeous St. Brown at wide receiver. Cam Smith appears to have put himself in a position to be on the field a lot this year. And then you got a bunch of guys kind of clumped together. We'll see how that all plays out. But do you feel like within the parameters of what I just said that this is a run-first football team?
I know that people want to hear that. Again, I think you've got to be smart about who you're playing against. I'll give you an example. Pre-Mike Elko, Wake Forest in 2012 decided to put eight or nine guys in close to the line of scrimmage on defense almost every play and left the wide receivers in one-on-one matchups that weren't favorable to Wake Forest. And Notre Dame absolutely torched those cornerbacks that were stuck in really disadvantaged. So if you're going to be stubborn and say, well, we're a run-first team, and you have these favorable matchups where you can just get touchdowns very easily and first downs very easily throwing the ball, you're silly to not take advantage of that. I think where this seems a little bit different, where you can say it's run-first, is they're going to be able to run when they have to. I don't think that a lot of Brian Kelly's teams have been able to do that.
I agree.
Yeah, I think that's where you say this is run first. But in terms of running on first down, running on second down, throwing on third down, if it's third and seven, I don't think you'll see that. I think you'll see a mix. But I do think that this is a team that can push people around. Now, we're going to find out very quickly if that's reality because, again, there's some really good run defenses on the schedule.
You're truly a really good run team when it's third and one, it's third and two, it's fourth and one, and the whole world knows you're going to run the football and you can stuff it down their throat. And that's been an issue.
I've covered a team like that when Indiana had Anthony Thompson back in the 80s and Dave Schnell from Elkhart Central was their quarterback. Everybody in the stadium knew Anthony Thompson was going to get. That's why he finished second in the Heisman Trophy. He didn't have long runs. He wasn't a speed burner. But on third and one, fourth and two, you knew he was getting the ball and he was going to get a first down or a touchdown.
I'll admit, you've changed my mind on one thing about the running game. I was the guy going into fall camp that felt like I wanted Josh Adams carrying the football a majority of the time. And it wasn't because I was disrespecting Dexter Williams or Tony Jones Jr. I just felt like that more of Josh Adams gave this team the best chance to succeed. And as I've watched the players and I've listened to your rationale, I totally see what Tony Jones Jr. can do to this team, the change of pace that Dexter Williams can bring to this football team. So I've kind of jumped off the Josh Adams 2022 carry train. In fact, you brought some statistics recently saying that's not really who he has been throughout his Notre Dame career. So I guess I've totally changed my thought process, and I'm now expecting Tony Jones Jr., Dexter Williams to have their share of carries in this Temple offense, and who knows? We'll see if this two running back set that we've seen off and on during fall camp and in videos is reality. If you can get two of those guys on the field at the same time, despite all the other options you have at wide receiver and tight end, I think that offers some really intriguing possibilities.
Not everybody has timeshare at running backs, but I'd say most teams do. And the team that really sold me on it was the 2012 Alabama team with T.J. Yeldon and Eddie Lacy, and they were sold on it. Now, years later, Derrick Henry won a Heisman because he was not one of those guys. He had big numbers because they just kept handing them the ball, but they didn't have people that were his peers on their team at that time as far as running backs. So they would have stuck with that. So they felt like they had to hand it to Derrick Henry. But even look last year with LSU, as good as Fournette was, Geis was incredible. And even when Fournette was healthy, getting Darius Geis involved, you know, was a real smart
yes.
thing. And I think for Notre Dame, it works. And these kids have bought into it. It's funny because their running backs coach is Notre Dame's all-time career-leading rusher, and his mark is probably going to stay safe because you're in this timeshare mode, and even he had to kind of become convinced, but I think he is at this point, too. It's not just making them better college players. It's also making them better pro prospects, and I think you can do both.
Keep more tread on the tire.
Keep more tread on the tire.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. It's game week for Notre Dame. We've got it covered for you on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Legacy Heating and Air, and Sport Clips on this Monday evening. Now, we have spent the summer, I think, doing an okay job reminding folks, hey, this Irish offense has the capability to do some good things, but they're going to face a schedule that on paper, they could face some really good high-end defenses challenging them throughout this Fighting Irish schedule. How would you assess the challenges that this Irish run game will face? Maybe if we just want to go early on in the schedule, because a lot's going to happen here over the next couple of weeks to change the perception of maybe teams like USC or NC State, which are deeper in the schedule. Maybe we just look at September as a way to kind of kickstart the conversation. Do you feel like there is some stiff competition for this new-look Irish run game in that month?
Well, just I'll go big picture, then I'll shrink it down to September.
Okay.
Big picture, you face nine of your 12 teams were top 40 run defenses last year. Only two were worse than 51st, North Carolina's and Navy's. So you're facing some teams that were at least good last year. Okay, Temple lost some personnel, but they have some new coaches, head coach and defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator.
Sure.
So we're not sure quite what to expect from them other than three quarterbacks and two kickers, according to their head coach.
We'll get to that.
Okay. Georgia has 10 starters back, so you would assume that was a really good run defense last year. It's going to be a good run defense this year. Boston College, they'll be tough against the run. They were, again, one of the better run defenses last year. Michigan State, I'm not sure what to expect from them just because of their off-season stuff. How are they going to come together? You know, typically, they're tough to run against. They weren't vintage Michigan State last year. And then Miami of Ohio, I think they're going to be solid. You know, they were a team that was 0-6, got their quarterback back, went 6-6, and almost beat an SEC team, Mississippi State, in a bowl game. So
right.
I think they're going to face some pretty good teams. So we'll find out. We won't have to wait until October to find out if this is a good run team or not. We will have a great gauge by the five teams that Notre Dame plays in September. And in terms of teams that sack the quarterback, we will also see some elite sacking teams. There were five that were in the top 25 in sacks last year out of the 12. And Boston College, Temple, you know, so two of those were those such teams. Georgia wasn't in that group, but I would imagine, again, with 10 starters back, they're going to be a little bit better at getting after the quarterback than they were last year.
All right, that's a look at the Irish running game and what to expect early on in the season from opposing defenses. We'll get to some defensive conversation in our next segment. You'll hear from Rover Drew Tranquil. But just for a moment here, let's set the stage what's going to be happening this week. Tomorrow at noon will be Brian Kelly's press conference. You'll hear it live on WSBT Radio. Again, tomorrow at noon, Brian Kelly's press conference live here on WSBT. And also tomorrow night on SportsBeat at 6:10, Jack Nolan's going to join us. We're going to talk about some new things happening with the video board that he's involved in and how it affects some programming we're going to have. Also, Wednesday night at 6:10, our opposing press box interview with Mark Narducci, who covers Temple football for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Thursday, of course, at 5:30, Tyler James, another Fighting Irish football insider report, IndyInsider.com recruiting update. And then coming up Friday at 6:30, we're going to kick off a weekly conversation with WNDU's Angelo DiCarlo. I'm going to be doing some stuff on the TV side with them. Angelo's going to do some stuff with us on the radio side. We'll explain all that coming up later on in the week. And we're very excited every Monday during the season at 6:15. Indy Insider for the South Bend Tribune, Mike Varell, is going to jump in on the conversation and offer his insight on this Fighting Irish football team. So that starts next Monday at 6:15.
You need to have some kind of Taylor Swift music be his walk-up music.
I'll let you pick it. You tell me what you want, and I will edit it, and we'll make it happen.
All right.
Okay?
Okay.
We're going to do this?
I'm going to get busy.
Is he going to be okay with this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Very good. And also want to mention some new programming coming to WSBT Radio this week. Every Thursday here on WSBT Radio at 7 o'clock, it is going to be Caveman Corner, brought to you by Midland Engineering. It's 30 minutes on the Mishawaka football program, followed at 7:30 by the Brian Kelly Radio Show. That will start this Thursday. So the debut editions of Caveman Corner this Thursday at 7, Brian Kelly Radio Show at 7:30, and a brand new football show is going to start this Friday at noon on WSBT Radio. It is the official kickoff of your football weekend, and it's called Leprechaun Lunch with former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley and our very own Sean Stiers. They're going to be talking Notre Dame football for an hour every Friday at noon here on WSBT Radio.
Which one of those two is the leprechaun?
That is to be determined.
Okay. That sounds cool. I like that.
Yeah, so Evan and Sean, we're going to be hosting this brand new show live Friday at noon, Leprechaun Lunch on WSBT Radio. It will follow Dan Patrick, and then after the show, another hour of the Rich Eisen Show here on WSBT Radio. So we've got some new things to offer this year.
I think you should get Colin McGregor on the Leprechaun Show.
He's counting money right now.
Okay.
Some say he had a little con job over the weekend. I don't know. A lot of people were interested. Boxing match.
I saw three rounds of it for free on Twitter.
Do you feel guilty?
No. It was interesting for three rounds.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to focus on the Irish defense. You'll hear from Rover Drew Tranquil. He's Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. It's a game week for the Fighting Irish. We have you covered on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT.
This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Niles Morgan just threw a blocker aside and sacked the quarterback.
On Michiana's Sports Leader.
Dexter Williams is on the run. Can they catch him? They cannot. 59 yards. Touchdown, Notre Dame.
96.1 FM, WSBT.
It's a game week for the Fighting Irish, and you have tuned in to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. We're also brought to you by Sport Clips and Legacy Heating and Air. I'm Darren Pritchett, joined by Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. He's been covering the Irish since 1988, right? Well, you've been in town since 1988. You covered the Big Ten initially.
And then Notre Dame basketball for a couple years. And then really Notre Dame starting in 1998 with Irish Sports Report. And then I became the beat writer for the South Bend Tribune in 2005.
So around 19 years covering the Irish football team.
Yes, this would be the 20th year.
Very good. Well, Temple is in town for the opener. New coach. They might bring 16 quarterbacks and 10 kickers, by the way it sounds. Our guest on Wednesday from the Philadelphia Inquirer, Mark Narducci, had a story today. And you kind of get the feel, are we getting conned by the new head coach? He just doesn't want to tell Notre Dame who the quarterback is. But I read stories about how they've been working out four guys most of camp. Maybe he knows who it obviously is and he's not going to tell, but I don't think he is feeling absolutely wonderful about his quarterback situation right now.
Well, they don't have, I mean, the one thing in his defense is they don't have the guy they had last year who was pretty good with Philip Walker. If Philip is on the Indianapolis Colts training camp roster, he was a pretty good quarterback. Notre Dame faced him a couple years ago in Philadelphia. But to give four guys reps that deep in a training camp doesn't seem to conducive to any of them mastering the offense. And then the whole thing about maybe play as many as three quarterbacks, great if they do, not putting out a depth chart, talking about playing two different kickers. It, to me, it kind of reeks of desperation. You made a good point the other day, and I don't know if we were on or off the air, but, you know, Coach Collins, with all due respect, you know, he says, I don't want...
It was on the air.
Yeah, I don't want to tell these guys that they're second or third team, then they'll start practicing like they're second or third team. Darren's like, if they can't realize that from the sequence they go in and practice, then they're not real smart. So,
and if you need that motivation, then there's a problem within the program.
Right, there's a problem within the program. So, at a place like Temple, it just seems unnecessary. You want to kind of invite people to get to know the team. And if you really have to play those kind of games before your first game, if that's really how you think can gain you an edge, then what's going to happen when you get hit in the mouth the first time? But, you know, Jeff Collins was a very good defensive coordinator at Florida, and I really respect his defensive knowledge, and I expect Temple to play well defensively.
It's just like the whole situation right now with Michigan and Florida. Harbaugh is not handed out a depth chart, and I don't know how long, so McElvain's like, you know what? I'm not going to do anything either. I understand, and I've always said this, Eric, you've heard me say it, I believe in coaches doing whatever they need to do to give themselves the best chance to win. If that's shutting out the media, whatever they think is best, you know what, we may not like it, but fine. But not releasing a depth chart, that does absolutely nothing in the whole scheme of things.
Right, because Michigan isn't even releasing a roster.
It's ridiculous.
And it's getting old. It's getting old. If there comes a time where he doesn't have a winning season, people will turn on that. It's just unnecessary.
That's for people that know they have no chance of winning.
Right.
I mean, if you're a pretty good football team, what are you scared of? What are you scared of? Is the media so smart in Ann Arbor that they're going to give away everything you have? Let's don't give all of us in the media too much credit.
Especially when you only have five starters returning. You know, there's a lot of newness about your team that teams aren't going to be able to see on film until after you play Florida.
Silly. But good for Florida. If they're going to play the game, we'll play along with them. I hope more teams do that. Just don't play along, or just play along with whatever Harbaugh's doing right now. I think he's great for college football. He's different. He's energetic. But I just think he's missing the boat. If someone is advising him, he's getting bad advice. If this is his own concoction, then I think he's worried about the wrong things. I really do. Let's talk about the Fighting Irish defense. We'll focus on Drew Tranquil a little bit, the Notre Dame senior rover slash safety. Second on the team in tackles last year. This might surprise some people. Number one in solo tackles on the Fighting Irish last year. Our colleague Sean Stiers recently caught up with Drew Tranquil, and this was Tranquil talking about just playing in this new defense put together by Mike Elko.
I think guys are letting loose a little bit more, having fun playing football, like you said. I think guys are excited to come out to practice. I see more energy. I see more enthusiasm. I hear less talk of, gosh, I need a break. I need, you know, my legs are dead. Or, gosh, coach is just beating me up. I hear more of, I can't wait to get out there to improve upon what I did yesterday. I can't wait to get out there and improve this aspect of my game. And so, 9-day difference, like Niles said, a lot more excitement, a lot more enthusiasm.
last year on this program, this was my opinion. I had no proof of it. This was just an opinion. Watching Notre Dame play defense in September, it looked like a group that was thinking a lot because maybe they didn't understand the concepts in their defense. But I also mentioned, I always felt like that watching them play, I got the sense that they maybe were not even believers in what they were trying to do on the field. Again, I don't know if that was accurate or not, but listening to Drew Tranquil talk about this year's defense, kind of looking back at last year, I think it kind of makes sense. They're excited to go out on the field. They're excited about learning. Not getting drugged down by coaches. That was an interesting comment. I'm kind of paraphrasing there. But it just seems like their heads are clear. They have been taught the fundamentals, and they really believe in this defense. Maybe I'm reading too much into his comments, but it just sounded like a much happier defensive room.
They do, but now they have to translate that onto the field. So that's, you know, certainly being in the right frame of mind is one thing. Being in great physical condition, which they obviously are, that we've seen, is another. But you still have to translate that into football productivity, and so that's the next stage. In terms of, you know, what was going on with this team, I mean, to this day, it confuses me why Brian Kelly brought Brian Van Gorder back for a third season.
That was first guessing. You mentioned this before last year.
Yeah, I just, and I even mentioned to him in a one-on-one interview in June before last season, I was honest with him. I said, I'm not sold on him. You know, I want to hear your side of it and what you feel. And his thought at that point was that they had been recruiting to a much different system and that this was the year that that was going to kick in.
Wasn't an excuse anymore.
Right. It wasn't an excuse. And you know, I had talked to some other people around the program, and they all kind of knew that it was a big year for Brian Van Gorder, and then it was just a disaster. And as they distanced themselves from Brian Van Gorder with Mike Elston kind of running things last year, you know, if it was a great system, they would have kind of stuck with it and just called the plays differently. But they ditched everything. Everything, the way that the defense was being taught, the way it was being called, the way it was schematically set up.
Not afraid to play young players?
Not afraid to play young players. The philosophy shifted. You know, Brian Kelly wasn't forthcoming that much with that information, and even kind of put in you know, a pseudo interim off defensive coordinator when it was in actuality Mike Elston, and had he been more forthcoming, people would have said that he was throwing Brian Van Gorder under the bus. I threw Brian Van Gorder under the bus, and I'll take responsibility for that. I just feel like,
well, you were telling an honest story. You weren't throwing him under the bus.
Right. I just felt like it was a bad fit. I think Brian Van Gorder would probably do much better at the NFL level and was, and I think that's where his fit is better, because he doesn't have to deal with tempo on a full-time basis. He doesn't have to deal with playing in space and spread offenses to that extent. He can kind of focus more on what his philosophy, core philosophy is.
We're getting you ready for the start of the Irish season. Saturday versus Temple. Hear the game on WSBT Radio. Kickoff right around 3:40. Darren Pritchett with Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Here is Fighting Irish senior Drew Tranquil on better communication.
I think minimizing the communication needed. I think guys aren't necessarily worried about what the guy on the other side of the field is. That guy's communicating what the guys on the side of the field needs to hear, and taking care of it like that. I think guys are studying more. I think guys are having a better attention to detail about their position. I like that we're doing a lot more position meetings instead of a full defensive meeting, which is really allowing guys to hone in on the technicalities of each position. And so I think that's why you see a better sense of communication.
Everything we talked about, or maybe partially speculated on, kind of validated in that particular comment. Breaking down into position groups, attention to detail, fundamentals being stressed by this particular coaching staff. It just wasn't a situation last year. Those defensive players were not given the best opportunity to succeed. Plain and simple. Totally different this year. That doesn't mean they're going to go out and give up only 13 points a game or be number 10 in the country in run defense. But those guys on the defensive side of the football, with the structure of this defense, with the way it's being taught, they have been given, I think, every opportunity to have a chance to succeed this year. And Tranquil talked about some of the reasons why in his comments.
I agree. But I do think that they have two position groups that are going to get attacked early in the season, and we're going to see how they respond to that. And that's going to be the interior defensive line and the safeties. And if Temple can't do it, Georgia sure as heck is going to.
One final piece of audio we want to play regarding Drew Tranquil, the Irish senior rover and safety. Sean Stiers, our colleague here on Sports Beat, had a chance to ask Drew a few questions, and here was their conversation.
When you think about Mike Elko, I mean, what does he bring on a daily basis?
Consistency. You know, his message is the same day to day. Doesn't change, doesn't waver. Good day, bad day, doesn't really matter. He's bringing the same message to us every single day, and I think guys needed that sense of consistency on a day-to-day basis.
What's the easiest way to get on his bad side, though?
Probably talk about his haircut, his missing hair, how we're making him go bald, or his fetish for Coke or Diet Coke. So, yeah,
the simple stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
What about Clark Lee, your position coach? Like, how would you describe him?
Honestly, he's one of the best coaches I've ever had in my entire life. Really cares about developing the whole person. Multiple times this camp, he's just pulled guys aside, had life conversations with us. He cares far more about us than the football field, far beyond the football field. And when you have a coach that you know is in your corner, he's able to communicate effectively with you, get on you when he needs to. But we all know, like, it's out of love. And so he's just a very, very consistent, very doesn't have a lot of highs or lows, just very consistent, very brings a lot of energy.
Well, kind of along those lines, he seems so easygoing.
Yeah.
And then what you're talking about right there, does that help just the relationship process and the communication process and the whole thing, just the fact that he does seem like such an even-keel guy?
Yeah, he's steady. You know what you're getting with him. And so, you know, coming in the office one day, you know, you don't have to worry about, okay, he's going to be screaming at me today and then, you know, in my corner tomorrow. It's steady with him. It's consistent with him. And so that's really been huge in the development of a lot of our guys.
Does he get upset, though?
Oh, absolutely. I think every coach gets upset, but he always lets us know, like he loves us and we're in this together, and, you know, we have what we need, but we need all we have. So, love the guy.
All right. Thanks a lot, Drew.
Yeah.
Drew Tranquil speaking with our Sean Stiers recently. Safety position, boy, Eric, we've talked a lot about it during the offseason, and now we're 6 days away from that first game. Still no decision yet on the status of Aloe Gilman, the Navy transfer. Brian Kelly did mention the other day, if Saturday morning the NCAA called and said Aloe Gilman is eligible to play this year, that Aloe Gilman would be ready to play against Temple, even if it was the morning of the game, because he understands the concepts, very smart guy. And right now there is a need for consistent quality play from the safety position. We've now gone through fall camp. We've seen a lot of different combinations. Give Irish fans your best thought on what we're going to see on Saturday. Maybe best case scenario on what could possibly go wrong in that position with a lot of inexperience and a lot of question marks right now. And as you said, teams are going to pick on a couple of parts, and safety is one of those parts.
Well, I think you'll see Nick Coleman and Jalen Elliott to start out. I think you will see Julian Love in certain situations playing safety. I think you'll see Drew Tranquil in certain situations move from rover to safety. And then I think you'll see some other younger guys kind of mix in. I think you'll see Isaiah Robertson on the field and Devin Studstill, and you may see Jordan Jenmark Heath at some point. He's the guy that I can't get a feel for how quickly he'll ascend. I know Brian Kelly really liked the first impression that he made, but he had such a short window to do it because he was injured earlier in camp. So I'm curious to see where that heads. But he's not on scout team.
one final follow-up question. Julian Love is a cornerback, considered one of the better cornerbacks on this team, has the capability to play safety. He has been playing both positions during fall camp. Do you believe Dante Vaughn needs to establish himself as a consistent, reliable corner in order to allow Love to possibly help out at the safety position? Or is there a chance where they just may have to move Love there and have to pay the consequences if there is a little inconsistency in the spot where someone takes over for him at corner?
You know, you have Crawford, Watkins, and Love kind of as your core cornerbacks, but what if you want to have that nickel guy on the field, which is Crawford,
right,
and you want to have strong safety play on third down? Does that mean Dante Vaughn becomes a corner and Julian becomes a safety? Yeah,
right.
I think there's, you know, you're weighing, is Nick Coleman a better safety than Dante Vaughn as a corner? That's kind of the math that you're doing there. And, you know, I think during training camp, Dante Vaughn has proven to be reliable. Now, again, in a game situation, you may see something completely different. We did with Nick Coleman as a corner last year. Nick Coleman had a pretty good camp, got into games, and was getting isolated and having trouble in that sense. I like Nick Coleman a lot as a player. I'd want him on my team, but I still don't know what we're going to see from him,
right,
as a safety, because, you know, he's new to the position. He's fast. Is he going to make mistakes? Because at safety, the mistakes are magnified, especially at free safety.
Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Coming up next are my five question of the day, the top five storylines that possibly are unanswered going into Brian Kelly's weekly press conference tomorrow. We will offer some choices coming up next. The Sports Beat continues, presented by Budweiser and also brought to you by Sport Clips and Legacy Heating and Air on Michiana Sports Leader 96.1 FM WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
The top five storylines that are unanswered going into Brian Kelly's weekly press conference tomorrow, which is live on WSBT Radio at noon. Eric, number five.
Number five is, what exactly is Notre Dame's return game going to look like? We saw a lot of really good players, candidates to audition at both punt return and kickoff return. Curious to see who actually ends up with those roles.
Number four.
How will Brian Kelly deal with the three-headed monster at quarterback from Temple and the two-headed monster at kicker?
Going through possible unanswered storylines leading into Brian Kelly's press conference tomorrow at noon on WSBT Radio. Number three.
You know, the thing, he's not going to answer it tomorrow, I don't think. We'll have to see it in a game, is how the wide receiver rotation exactly going to work. Who's all in it? Who's kind of the outside looking in? And then also the tight end rotation, you know, how's that going to work?
Number two,
what's the pass rush going to look like? I think it's going to be improved. I think they've got depth at that position. I think they've got some dynamic guys. I need to see it. You know, last year it was about four games in before they got a sack.
And number one, unanswered question going into BK's press conference tomorrow.
Will Notre Dame's run defense actually be improved?
That's our My Five Question of the Day on WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports Section.
Well, Tyler will have a question and answer session with Temple's football beat writer. I think that'll be pretty interesting, actually. We will have all the coverage of the U.S. Open tennis tournament and much, much more.
Very good, Eric. We will talk to you tomorrow, and we look forward to hearing your questions during the Brian Kelly press conference live on WSBT Radio at noon.
I'm looking forward to hearing his answers.
Sean will join me in a moment. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Your home for every Notre Dame football game.
Goodbye, Brandon Wimbush. 58 yards. Sanders is pulling away with every stride, and he goes in. 92 yards.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents.
Race is on. Josh Adams wins it. Touchdown, Notre Dame. 98 yards. 76 yards. Touchdown. Equanimeous St. Brown.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Faulkner breaks one tackle down the near sideline, gets a block, cuts back inside. Touchdown, Faulkner and Mishawaka.
York now in front, Ogletee. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four! Gets up and in by Rex Kluger with 1.5 seconds left. Notre Dame leads.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Second hour of Sports Beat for this Monday. Darren Pritchett from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. Cubs in Lake County tonight, 7:05 first pitch on WSBT Radio. Sean back in our WSBT studios. It is our first Notre Dame football game week of 2017. The Irish hosting the Temple Owls this Saturday. Kickoff probably sometime between 3:30 and 3:40 on Saturday right here on WSBT Radio. Our pregame coverage begins at 9 a.m. Eric, Sean, and I will have the Game Day Sports Beat pregame show presented by Budweiser Saturday from noon until 2:30 live from the Notre Dame Stadium press box. And then after the game, also from the press box, the official Notre Dame football postgame show. Busy, busy day on Saturday, and a lot of great information to get to over the next few days on Sports Beat leading up to that season opener. And as I documented in the 5 o'clock hour, Sean is involved in a brand new Notre Dame football show that will debut this Friday at noon on WSBT Radio, Leprechaun Lunch. Former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley and Sean will be talking Notre Dame football every Friday at noon until 1 o'clock. They're kind of sandwiched right between the Dan Patrick Show and the Rich Eisen Show here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So you've got a brand new show to deal with, and also you've got the Caveman Corner Show that's debuting Thursday at 7, right before the Brian Kelly Radio Show at 7:30. So yeah, you got a busy week ahead. But a couple of thoughts on Leprechaun Lunch and what listeners can expect when they maybe enjoy their lunch and a chance to talk and listen to some Notre Dame football conversation.
Well, and that's exactly it. You can't get enough Notre Dame football, especially at this time of year. The season's starting, and it's the perfect way to get into the weekend with Evan and I, and Evan having the football background that he does, former Notre Dame quarterback. We'll be getting into what to expect each Saturday, and we'll look at a lot of other stuff as well. But we'll have some guests, and we'll look at who the opponent's going to be and that kind of thing. He does a lot of breakdowns himself of each week's opponent, so we'll be getting to some deep detail, I guess you'd say, about each week's opponent. And so we'll get a good chance to do that and just talk a lot of football for nice. An hour getting into the weekend. We're looking forward to it.
All right, so our new programming this week, Thursday at 7 p.m. following Sports Beat, Caveman Corner, presented by Midland Engineering. It'll be Sean, Dean Huppert, Director of Athletics for the school city of Mishawaka, and special guests, of course, along the way. I'm assuming Bart Curtis will be a regular guest on that program, the head football coach of the Cavemen. And then at 7:30, the 2017 debut of the Brian Kelly Radio Show. And then Friday at noon, Leprechaun Lunch with Evan Sharpley and Sean Stiers, all right here on 96.1 FM WSBT. And don't forget, tomorrow at noon, Brian Kelly press conference live here on 96.1 FM WSBT. So we are ready to roll with our programming with the Notre Dame football season now upon us.
Game week's here.
Finally. I'm excited. Let's get this thing going. I'm ready to get to the stadium on Saturday and just soak in the new environment created by all the changes at Notre Dame Stadium. So we've set the stage of what we're going to do this week to get you ready for the first game. So now let's just offer our opinion on expectations for this football team, overall, offensive, defensive. I know everybody has their own expectations. Some Irish fans believe every single year they should go 12-0 and then win the national championship. Others are kind of wondering what in the world's going to happen this year after going 4-8. I think a lot of people are curious to see all these changes that we've been talking about. How much difference will it make? So let's just kind of scratch the surface a little bit on the potential of this football team. And the best way to start out the conversation is hearing from the head coach of the Fighting Irish, Brian Kelly, talking about that subject.
Well, we're certainly not a finished product in any means. You know, we had a really, I think, fine camp in terms of developing who we are. You know, I think we're going to be a team that runs the football, can play fast, and can push the ball vertically. You know, we had a couple of big plays called back because of some penalties. But I think great versatility offensively. Defensively, you know, we're... And you saw this today, even though we gave up a couple of plays here and there, you know, we're going to play so much better up front. And that really makes you feel pretty good in that front seven. So better against the run, better fundamentally across the board in all areas, and our kicking game is going to be better. So when you put all those things together, I think we're going to continue to get better each and every week, and we'll see if that's good enough.
Now that cut was following the most recent Notre Dame football scrimmage at Notre Dame Stadium. So that was Brian Kelly offering an overall synopsis of what he thinks is going to happen this year with this football team, including against Temple this Saturday from Notre Dame Stadium. Sean, as you answer this question, what are your overall expectations, and maybe help Irish fans decide what their expectations should be?
That's, man, that's a good point right there. I guess when I listen to Brian Kelly, a lot of what I was am expecting or am looking for are some of the things that he touched on there. The realistic expectation is just first and foremost to see an improved team on the field, and going along with that, I expect to see one that is going to run the football more consistently on offense, one that looks a lot more fundamentally sound on defense, not missing assignments, tackling better, forcing more turnovers, doing those kind of things, one that's not making confounding mental mistakes, especially on special teams or in any other part of the game, but we saw a lot of those kind of things show up on special teams last year. And one that also isn't going to fade in the fourth quarter, because as we've talked about quite a bit, we've seen just what a big difference the new strength and conditioning program has made for this team. So those are just some of the basic things that I'm expecting going into this season.
I'm going to withhold most of my expectations until after the first couple of games. Because, well, I think they're an 8-win football team right now. That's just my opinion, what I've seen, listening, evaluating the situation. I feel like they're kind of an 8-win team with a chance to be a little better, and with the schedule, it could be difficult. Let's see how it all plays out after a couple of weeks. I just feel like this could be a team that improves significantly from last year, but the record may not fully indicate that just because of some of the difficulties on this particular schedule. So I'm a little cautious on my expectations. I will say I think they're an 8-win football team. I know we're going to break it down a little further here in a second, but I don't see any reason why the offensive side of the football shouldn't be very, very solid. And defensively, I just think it's all going to come down to the middle of that line and the safeties, how good they're going to be. But maybe we'll break it down a little further. Just as you analyze the offensive side of the football, what are your expectations?
Well, I think we're going to see a much better offensive line, for one. Again, when you sit back and think about this team last year, I mean, it's a team that lost a center, Nick Martin, to the NFL, and a lot of people right now looking at Nick Martin think he's going to be one of the best centers in the NFL here within the next year or two. They lost a left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, who was very good. They lost Will Fuller, and they lost C.J. Prosai. So, and two of those guys, Stanley and Fuller, were first-round guys. So they missed a lot last year, and between not just losing those guys, but even the returnees like McGlinchey moving from right to left. There was just so much. There were so many moving parts up on that offensive line, and we saw some things that we took for granted, just that line was going to be consistent regardless of that. Well, we found out that wasn't the case. But everything we've seen about the line says it's going to be much better. And I think we're going to see. Now, one thing we haven't necessarily seen is that running game. That's probably one thing that we haven't seen in fall camp. But again, when we look at that, it's like, okay, we're obviously seeing what Brian Kelly and Chip Long want us to see. So how much can we read into that? I don't know. But I think we're going to see a bigger running game. We're going to see more yards on the ground per game than we saw last year. And it's going to start up front. And I think we're going to see really dynamic play out of the quarterback. Still some questions, more questions than I thought there would be overall on the receivers. We know right. We're going to see a star guy in EQ St. Brown, but there's just so much going on with the rest of those guys. Really not exactly sure what we're going to see from that. And that maybe is the thing that surprises me the most, is there are kind of some questions behind St. Brown.
Sean, I wrote down some of the things Brian mentioned during the comments that we just played a second ago. He thinks they're going to be able to run the football. I agree with him.
Mm-hmm.
This offensive line, feel like there is going to be a more consistent group this year. The left side of the line just looks so good. How could it not work this year? It would just be very surprising with three outstanding running backs and a very athletic quarterback that can do damage. Run game should be a strength of this football team. Yeah, they're going to play fast. That's what we hear. It's going to be a tempo football team. Push the ball vertically. Well, we know Wimbush has the arm to push the envelope in the vertical game. He has an extremely strong arm, a stronger arm than Deshaun Kizer. Cam Smith stays healthy, arguably the fastest guy on the team playing wide receiver. Equanimeous St. Brown, a lot of intriguing parts. Yeah, they should be able to do that. You know, we've heard run the football is a priority, play action team. We haven't seen the play action in practice. That's right. Not something media has seen, so we're going to see it along with you for the first time when they take the field against Temple. And Brian talked about the versatility. I mean, there's no doubt. You've got three running backs. You've got five tight ends. You've got anywhere from 7 to 10 wide receivers. You feel like that can do some good things for this football team. I guess the one thing I need to learn about the wide receiving core, Equanimeous St. Brown is a really, really outstanding wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. He's in a separate class. Cam Smith, if healthy, appears to be a guy that can stretch the field, put pressure on the defense vertically. But then everybody else, kind of in that 3 through 8 category, how good are they?
Yeah.
Is it a bunch of players that are kind of good and they're all about at the same level? Or are there going to be a couple of guys that separate themselves from everybody else? I feel like there's a bunch of group of players that have different traits but maybe haven't separated themselves from the pack. So that's what I really need to see on Saturday, the wide receiver rotations. Is it Equanimeous here, and then the second tier starts with Cam Smith? How many guys are in that second or third tier? That's what I need to learn.
I'm right along there with you, and that's something that we still, when we've been there, we really haven't been able to sort that out too much. We've seen different guys at times have good, one good practice or so, but we haven't seen that consistency really, other than St. Brown, as we've connected all of it in the practices we've been able to see together. So I'm with you. Who is going to separate themselves once the season actually unfolds?
And let's go with some defensive thoughts. What are you expecting to see? This is the hard one.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. And we've seen a lot of fans ask, how can just changing the defensive coordinator make that much difference based on what we saw last year? And I realize we're all going to have to kind of see this together, but everything that we have seen during training camp tells us that this is going to be, I think, a pretty dramatically improved defense this season. Just starting with the fundamentals, starting with Mike Elston, working with those guys
right
up front, and just a really solid linebacking core where they've got a lot of experience. The young cornerbacks last year, who are a year older, played so well last year, and keeping they've kept developing. Now, there are some questions still and some concerns at the back end of the secondary, but again, I just think that when you look at a Mike Elko defense and what he's been able to do, Wake Forest had 41 sacks last year. Notre Dame had 14. There were only 6 teams in the entire nation who had fewer sacks than Notre Dame last year. And as we've talked about, I think we're going to see just a lot more pressure on the quarterbacks. We're going to see a lot more sacks, and not just sacks, tackles for loss, and just disruption along that front. And I think that's something that Brian Kelly touched on, starting with both lines right there in the middle. They're both going to be much improved this year. Now, depth is is a potential concern still, especially in the interior, but we've seen some really good things depth-wise from the end positions where some guys that we weren't really thinking about, like Trombetti and Aquara and some others on the ends who we weren't really talking about as much coming into camp, have really, we've seen them grow since camp has started.
Pass rush, I'm hopeful. We've kind of been hoping for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful. Dalen Hayes physically looks the part. Some glimpses of the scrimmage a week ago Saturday, you saw him do some good things. So I'm hopeful the pass rush is going to be better. Run defense, you feel like how far along the defensive line has come since the spring, that it is going to be possibly an area of the football team that improves a lot. Now, they started at a really low level, so they've got more room to grow. That's why I made that statement.
Right.
I mean, there is still some question about the depth of the interior of the defensive line, and we're going to have to see that play out. I mean, we got to see it. In terms of the linebacking core, I feel good there. Cornerback position, I feel good. Safety, well documented. They've got to show it. They're going to be tested early and often. If Temple can't do it, we know Georgia can definitely test that particular group. Will Aloe Gilman, will he be eligible? We still don't know yet. Does Dante Vaughn come along far enough at cornerback where you can move Julian Love to safety to help out if necessary? A lot of moving parts right now on the defensive side of the football. All I can say is basically what you said. It's a smarter defense. Like Drew Tranquil said, we played back his comments again in the first hour. The guys now are able to work with their position coaches in meetings rather than as an entire group. Not everybody has to know what everybody else is doing. Worry about your responsibilities. With the fundamentals being taught, it will be a shock if this looks like a confused defense this year. And a defense that plays slow, because it sure seems like they understand the concepts that they're trying to execute on the football field. And I don't think we could say that last September.
No, exactly. A lot simpler concepts. And I don't care what sport you're playing, the less you have to think, the better, the faster you're going to play, the better you're going to do, and we've seen that this fall with these guys.
We'll step aside for a moment. Rapid fire coming up. Sports Beat continues next on 96.1 FM WSBT.
This is Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame to Durham Smythe
on Michiana's sports leader.
Is it picked off? It looks like it is. Drew Tranquil coming up on the ball.
96.1 FM WSBT.
Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat presented by Budweiser, also brought to you by Sport Clips and Legacy Heating and Air on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM WSBT, along with Sean Stiers. I'm Darren Pritchett. South Bend Cubs baseball begins at 6:50 with the Jordan Automotive Group pregame show. First pitch, 7:05. It's the Cubs and Lake County tonight. Final meeting of a four-game series. South Bend's nine-game winning streak was snapped yesterday by the Captains, 9-6. We have Notre Dame football this Saturday. Kickoff probably right around 3:40 here on 96.1 FM WSBT. Plenty more football conversation to come, including in the midst of rapid fire.
Absolutely right, Darren. Let's start with this one. DeShone Kizer, he's been named the Cleveland Browns starting quarterback, but Bleacher Report draft analyst Matt Miller dropped his tweet last night, and I'll quote the most questionable part of the tweet. Quote, he has talent, didn't get much, any developmental help at ND, end quote. That from Matt Miller of Bleacher Report. So, Darren, is Miller's assertion fair or foul?
Who is this guy? We do a lot of scouting things on this program with the NFL draft.
Right.
We bring on some guests. Who is this guy? And where did he get his information? Does he have a source that provided this information? Is this him just grabbing ideas out of midair? I would like to know, because as I look at the situation, DeShone Kizer in the spring of 2015 completed one pass in the blue goal game.
Right.
We found out later that summer he was thinking about quitting football, picking up a baseball, and becoming a baseball pitcher, because apparently he threw mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
So he showed us nothing in the spring, was thinking about quitting, but decided to stick it out. Then we find out in the fall of 2015 in game number two, after Malik Zaire went down with injury, that all of a sudden DeShone Kizer, you know what, he's not a bad little football player.
Right.
So he obviously got better somewhere along the way, and he was groomed throughout that season, did a lot of good things, leading up to a pretty remarkable season when nothing was expected of him. In fact, I remember Brian Kelly saying, he is picking up things so quickly, we can continue to add stuff to what we want him to do. So there was a lot of high praise from Brian Kelly about DeShone Kizer, and obviously he was being taught pretty well, or he would not be able to pick up all these things as quickly as he was. Now, last year there were up and down moments. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Why was he not the starter in game one? Yeah, we can have that conversation if Matt wants to go down that road. I think that's a fair conversation. But we saw how this football team struggled in fourth quarters last year. A lot of variables to that, including, I think we would all agree, strength and conditioning had a lot to do with it. DeShone struggled in fourth quarters, partially himself, partially the team around him. So to say that Brian Kelly did not develop this football player, I think is very insulting to the entire offensive coaching staff. A quarterback can get better on his own, but he needs people around him to make him better as well. The coaching staff did that. So to make that statement without any sign of sources or anything, I thought it was pretty disrespectful to the Notre Dame football coaching staff, and I think he's absolutely dead wrong.
Yeah, it's all revisionist history, because Kizer wasn't even ranked among the top 250 players in the nation coming out of high school. Now, he was a four-star prospect, but he wasn't among the top 250 in the nation. And so then he redshirts in 2014. In 2015, you just documented from one completion in the spring game to thinking about quitting to a rising star to the point where going into 2015, the same guy, Matt Miller, had him rated as his number one quarterback among draft eligible prospects for this past season, going into 16. So in any case, there was some kind of development somewhere along the line, right? And really, he has a great 2015. He has a pretty good 2016 still, and that's despite the fact that I mentioned these guys when I was talking about the offense a minute ago. I mean, he loses his left tackle, Ronnie Stanley, drafted 6th overall last year. His best receiver, Will Fuller, drafted 21st overall. His center, Nick Martin, was drafted 50th overall. And his running back, C.J. Procise, drafted 90th overall. And those are all from that big 2015 season he had, obviously. So, and that's not to mention the fact that as a team, Notre Dame also lost 3 defensive players who were drafted, because it is still a team sport, so some of those fades you talk about in the close games, the defense plays into that as well. And that's really, so to Miller, apparently the difference between development and not being developed is the fact that they were 10-3 1 year, 4-8 the next year. So I mean, there are a lot of things that play into this, and it just, a month and a half after the season ended, this guy still had Kizer ranked as his number 2 quarterback, number 17 overall, and that's ahead of DeShone Watson. So it's really all a matter. I mean, what changed between then and when the draft rolled around? It's as I've said before, Kizer was out there so long from when he declared that he was picked apart, and the whole thing. Are there fundamental things that he still needs to fix? Yes. And he's worked on those, obviously, quite a bit. But I even asked it last week when we had Mary Kay Cabot on. Were there really these big deficiencies, or was it because he was just out there so long with his name out there and being overanalyzed and picked apart? And I still think a big part of that is that. And then I think you also still have to look at this as, just because he's Cleveland's starting quarterback doesn't mean all of his fundamental things have gone away, because there are still problems, and it's still relative to where he is. 2/3 of the rest of the NFL, he's still somebody's number 2, but because he's in Cleveland, he's their number 1 right now.
Well said. Yeah, he's been named the starter over the weekend, and he'll start against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Went 6-for-18, 93 yards, and an interception in the exhibition game Saturday against Tampa Bay. But it was disappointing to read that on Twitter. I was kind of in disbelief. But if he can prove us wrong by offering some insight on where he got that analysis, I'm all ears.
No, I would agree with that as well. It's just a cheap shot, I think, to blame his development at Notre Dame, because there were a lot of quarterbacks. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, just off the top of my head, none of them were finished, polished products going into the NFL. it ended up pretty well for him. I'm not saying that's gonna it's gonna end up the same for Kizer, but there are a lot of guys who've gone into the NFL with question marks about them. I mean, the biggest thing that I've seen from Kizer, because he's shown that arm, he's made some good decisions, he's held onto the ball too long sometimes. The biggest thing is still locking in on that primary guy, not looking off the safety, just staying locked in too long and using trying to use that pump fake while he's staring at a guy still. Yeah. If he can get away with that, he might do himself some good here a few games down the road.
On Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser, Legacy Heating and Air and Sport Clips with part two of Rapid Fire.
All right, Darren, start of the season, less than a week away for Notre Dame. So I pose this to you. Does the thing that has impressed you the most about the Irish during training camp outweigh the thing that concerns you the most about them heading into the season?
Wow. That's a question maybe I need beforehand.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I like doing it this way, but that's a really interesting question.
Got pretty deep there, huh?
Yeah, repeat it one more time.
Okay. Does the thing that has impressed you the most about them during training camp outweigh the thing that still concerns you the most about them? Like Under Armour, Nike, Majestic,
and Russell Athletic. Gosh, I don't know how to answer that. I've been impressed by Wimbush. I've been impressed by the tight end position, but I still think the ultimate concern is the safety position. So I guess to answer your question, my concern about the safety position overtakes how good I feel about the quarterback and tight end positions.
Okay, and that would make sense because obviously if they are struggling and giving up too many points, it's hard to overcome the other side. So, and that what's impressed me has just been the improvement of the defensive line. I think it's night and day different the way they're playing right now compared to last year. A completely different level of effort and skill as well, and it's a testament to Mike Elko, Mike Elson, and Matt Bayless on the conditioning side as well. And I just think that there've just been so many different guys who have made progress there. Dalen Hayes looks like a game changer, but they've got other guys like Tillery and Trombetti and Duke Treadway and just on and on, guys that have been impressive in camp. But I agree with you and what you're saying about the safety position, where that is a concern. But I don't know if what I'm thinking is if they are really as good as they have shown up front, that can at least help overcome some of that with the secondary between the pressures on the quarterback and things like that we talked about earlier. If they're disruptive enough up front, that can help cure some of that on the back end because quarterbacks will have less time to sit back there and make decisions, and it gives receivers less time to run the routes and the whole thing.
Well, I guess if the offense can put up 40 points a game, it'll take care of all the concerns I have. So just go out and score 40, then we'll be happy. Everything will be just fine and dandy.
There you go. There you go.
It's a good question, though.
All right. I didn't realize it was that deep, but I guess I can see what you're saying because there are so many different ways that you can look at that. So
I'm full of emotions right now, Sean. I'm sorry. Sure. I just can't handle all those emotions at once.
That's what it is. All right. Last question. Temple, Michigan, and Florida are all among teams that have not yet named starting quarterbacks for their openers this weekend. Fair or foul?
Fair or foul in terms of surprising they haven't announced it?
Just that they have not announced their starting quarterbacks. Fair or foul at this point when we're all sitting here in game week now?
I don't think Temple knows. Well, let me say that.
That might
I don't
be
think
true.
They don't have an excellent choice. They know who's going to start.
They're above the line.
I don't think they're comfortable with that particular choice. Michigan and Florida are just having a macho standoff. And since Michigan won't hand out rosters or depth chart, Florida's playing the same game. I've never felt like Malik Zaire is a difference maker in the passing game, so I question what he can do at Florida. He still hasn't won the job yet. That might be a telling sign, but I think the Temple situation is totally different from Florida, and Florida is totally different from Michigan. Michigan's just being difficult. Harbaugh's just being difficult. I don't see the advantage. I don't see the point, but I guess He's going to do what he thinks is best. But Temple, I just don't think they have the answer at quarterback, and this is what they're doing.
Well, and I think you've said this before. Coaches doing what they think is in their best interest, and I'm sure that there are other teams around the nation that have announced their starters either for the same reason. They keep it under wraps as long as possible to give them whatever kind of advantage they can get, and I get that. Even though, as you said, Jim Harbaugh has said he knows who it's going to be, but he's not going to name it because Florida hasn't named theirs. And in the meantime, McElwain at Florida is saying, why should I name my starting quarterback when Michigan hasn't even released their roster? I mean, so I completely, especially from McElwain's point of view, I completely understand why he wouldn't release any more than he has to, because Jim Harbaugh is just being a hardhead about this whole thing. And as for Temple, just what you said, they released this. Jeff Collins released this above the line depth chart today, and I don't know if you saw that, but it's basically
silly.
He said he doesn't believe in depth charts because of the whole nature of competing for spots, and doesn't want the 2 and 3 guys to all of a sudden stop competing because, you know, whatever. But at the same time, it's not like you're going to throw 4 quarterbacks out there realistically. He says anybody above what he calls the line could potentially get out there and play. And there are 4 quarterbacks listed above the line, so whatever. But again, I understand them. I understand getting whatever competitive advantage you can going into the first game, but it is what it is, I guess.
How much money do these coaches make? Can they possibly spend a little money on someone to talk to them that this is really foolish? Believe in what you can do as a coaching staff and a team, and if you really think a depth chart is going to affect the outcome of a game, boy, oh boy.
Well, and that's the thing about this whole Harbaugh deal, especially. Shouldn't he be past this at this point? It's one thing if he's still at San Diego or even Stanford when he was coming up at San Diego. Yeah, exactly. He should be well past doing this kind of stupid stuff, but here we are, and he still hasn't put out a roster since the beginning of last season.
Silly. Here we go. Silly. It's all I can say, but yeah. Good for them. But you know what? You better win.
Yeah.
You better win.
Especially when you're Michigan. I mean, your fans are going to put up with it as long as you win. If you don't, then it's not funny anymore.